Hello and welcome to the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name is Andrew Dalbo. I'll be here with Josh and Henry discussing all the good and bad about Arsenal Football Club. Let's get started. Hello and welcome to episode 2 of season 2 of the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name is Andrew Dalswell. As always, I'm here with Henry Payne. Josh Sippy unfortunately can't be with us. He has some writing duties to do in New York, but hopefully he will be with us soon. Henry, you are also stateside. Do you want to give everyone an update of what's been going on?
Yeah, so I'm currently in the football or soccer metropolis that is Oklahoma. So that's where I'm studying for an academic year abroad. But I'm very glad to be talking about my beloved Arsenal. But things have been a little negative, it seems, on the social media waves for the past couple of weeks. So let's put that right here today.
Yes, it's surprising stuff, really, isn't it, that Arsenal fans can be negative on social media.
Who would have known?
Yeah, I know. Who would have thunk it, eh? Speaking of the negativity, let's talk about the fact that Arsenal lost to Manchester City in a thorough shock. I mean, it was a really, you know, I can't believe they lost. I was so critical of that team after they lost that game. It was, you know, it was ridiculous. How dare they lose to arguably the best team of the Premier League era? What did you make of the performance, the defeat? Anything stood out to you? I assume you weren't upset like most like-minded fans, really. Was there anything particularly interesting?
From an expectation perspective, you obviously go into the game and every season just about with this hope that, yes, we can win. But then there's also the devil on your shoulder saying, come back to reality in terms of, this is a team that finished, I believe it was 33 points ahead of us last season. And if you didn't think that we were going to experience growing pains under a new manager, under a new regime, then I don't know what... Well, you're beyond saving, it would seem. It's just unbelievable because there's so much change. And granted, it's been 6 weeks, but you look at some of the other managers in the top four at the moment. Klopp struggled, well, he didn't necessarily struggle, but it took him time to implement his ideas and for them to work successfully. Same with, well, Guardiola took 1 year.
Yeah.
So, and Pochettino's still, you could argue, in that phase with Spurs of trying to really reach the pinnacle of his journey, if you will.
Yeah, so precisely.
If you didn't think that there were going to be growing pains with this entire experience, then you had another thing coming.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree completely. I think, yeah, Emery's been at the club for 6 weeks, basically. And I know he was announced in May, but pre-season didn't start till early July. He's been with these players for 6 weeks. Expecting him to come up against a Guardiola-driven team that is just so cohesive and well-knit together at the moment, it's completely ridiculous. And yes, there were problems with the performance, and that doesn't mean that the performance can't be criticised, but actually to expect them to win that game is foolish, it's stupid. And I think if Arsenal finished sixth this season but they showed signs of progression, then that for me is a good season. Now, admittedly, I'd like them to do better than that. I'd like them to get back into the Champions League, maybe finish in the top four, maybe win the Europa League, something like that. But actually, this year isn't about the results. I know that sounds stupid, but this year isn't about winning football games, really. This year is about improving the team and showing progression and developing as a collective unit. And it annoys me when fans get so hung up, like, you know, Sam Allardyce talking about, oh, Emery should have lumped it long because you can't play like that against Manchester City. It's a load of rubbish because Emery needs time to implement his ideas.
Yeah, and the beauty and also the curse for Emery being at Arsenal Football Club is that when you're at a big club like Arsenal Football Club is that you are resigned to the fact that you have to play football a certain way. Mm-hmm. You have to play attractive football. Mourinho's under the same pressure at United. He's won honours at Manchester United, but not in the fashion that Manchester United are renowned for.
Not at all.
And for many people, that's an issue. Of course, they want to win trophies, but if you I'm sure if you would ask any Manchester United fan, would you rather win 1-0 or 4-0? I mean, that's a stupid question, right? But, you know, do you get where I'm coming from in
the
terms
style.
Of...
They, the style.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's really important. But there are so many... You talked about Sam Allardyce. I unfortunately had TalkSport on the way... I just had TalkSport on. I heard excerpts of TalkSport, and I know it's their job to like get people to call in and whatnot, but just Adrian Durham is just so far up his own backside.
Yeah.
It is unbelievable. But I also, if you get the chance, have you seen the Amazon documentary on Manchester City yet?
No, I've really been meaning to watch it.
I'm in the same boat. I really want to watch it, but you can see the intensity that Guardiola has in that trailer, or he exudes in that trailer. And I really hope that that's the kind of personality that Emery is or becomes over the next few years. But I would also highly recommend that people look at the Monday Night Football analysis of Gary Neville, because I think it is so important what he said in terms of...
I agree.
Emery needs to be strong in terms of the fact he needs to tell the players, this is how it's going to be done. It is my way or the highway. If he adapts to the players, as Gary Neville said, he will have he is likely to lose the dressing room because there are too many selfish characters in modern football.
Yeah. No, no. I watched the Neville Carragher thing yesterday, and it was an interesting discussion. And I do get Carragher's perspective, where he's saying that actually, sometimes a manager's job is to best prepare the team to win the game in front of you.
Mm.
But I think, let's say, if they were talking about a manager who's coming in January to try and get a team out of the relegation zone, I think Carragher's perspective would be spot on. Mm. Because the point of that role is to win games and get results as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
The point of Unai Emery's role is not to get results as quickly as possible. The whole point of bringing in Unai Emery to Arsenal Football Club is to change the whole culture of the team, to provide a new way of playing, to bring new tactics, new strategies, new philosophies, to bring a whole different element to this football club, like Guardiola has at City, like Klopp has at Liverpool, like Pochettino has at Spurs. And that takes time. And it's the old adage of, you know, short-term pain, long-term gain. That's what Arsenal are going for. And Gary Neville's absolutely spot on when he says that Unai Emery should not, he absolutely cannot adapt his principles if he wants the long-term gain, because the players need to know that this is the way that Arsenal are going to play, and he's working out if they can play that way. So, like, for example, with Mesut Ozil, there's a very good reason why he subbed off Mesut Ozil halfway through the second half against Chelsea, because he realised that Ozil doesn't have the physical and the athletic and the mental commitment to play in a high-pressing style. So he hooked him, he took him off. I wonder if that's the same thing that's going on with Petr Cech. He's saying, well, let's see if he can play with his feet. And if in a few months he's realised he can't, then, well, let's bring in Bern Leno, who he knows he can play with his feet. You could say the same thing for Sergio Aguero at Manchester City, where Pep Guardiola said, you're going to play in a high-pressing style, and Aguero didn't, and he was dropped. And then he realised, adapted his ways, and now he's back in the starting striker role again. I think that's all that Emery's doing.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, there were obviously going to be growing pains, as I said.
Yeah, precisely.
But this idea of playing attacking or fantastic attacking football, I think, will still run through Arsenal Football Club. You saw fantastic attacking football in the first half against Chelsea.
Mm.
And so I tweeted after the game, and there was a lot of controversy about it. I said there was a lot of work to do, but that there were lots of positives.
Yeah.
And in hindsight, I should have said encouraging signs rather than a lot of positives, because I got absolutely slated for saying positives. But in reality, there are, in terms of, we showed character to get back into the game at 2-0 down.
Yeah.
Granted, we didn't go on and win the game, which would have been a massive statement. But you had Guendouzi, who played well, and he did so against Manchester City as well. Yeah. Iwobi had a really good game. I thought he was really strong on the ball. He was industrious. There was no issues down his side with Nacho Monreal. and we played some fantastic attacking football. I thought the substitutions were very positive, and I thought they were very cutthroat, as you said, in terms of if you're not willing, if you're not willing to adapt to my style, this is where you're going to be. So I actually think there are a lot of positives if you're willing to look at them. Obviously, sports and football are results driven, but I think you're absolutely right. At this time, you have to look at the positives and just take the positives from stuff like this, because our start was so difficult. Manchester City, the champions, probably one of the, if not the best team, one of the best teams in Premier League history, and Chelsea, who, let's be honest, have a fantastic squad also.
Well, you're playing you're playing the last two champions.
Yeah.
And you're playing the FA Cup winners and the champions from last year. So it's not a, not an easy start to the season at all. And you're doing so with a few injuries, dealing with the post-World Cup problems, and you're doing so with, like Emery said, a 19-year-old and a 22-year-old in midfield who have never played for the club.
Yeah.
You've got so much change at this football club that it's ridiculous to expect them to hit the ground running from day one.
Yep.
It's stupid. It does annoy me a little bit that fans just don't have the patience that is required to see this through. And I hope that the club has the patience to see this through. And even if it doesn't go very well in this first year, let take David Moyes at Manchester United, for example. Admittedly, many people think that the Moyes shouldn't have been hired in the first place. And I tend to agree with that assessment. But somebody or a few people at Manchester United believed that David Moyes was the right person to hire.
Yeah.
If that's the case, which it certainly is, then you cannot give him 1 year to try and change and revolutionise an ageing squad and a club that has been run by one man for 26 years or however long it was.
Yeah.
The same thing can be said for Unai Emery. If somebody believes that he is the right man for Arsenal, and somebody does believe that he's the right man for Arsenal, you cannot give him 1 year. You have to be patient with him, and you have to take the rough with the smooth early on and give him a minimum 2 years.
Really, yeah, I tend to agree.
Really, I'd like to see him given three or four, irrespective of what happens.
Yeah.
Before you begin to expect a few results, and then you can maybe properly evaluate his work and say, well, this is going well, or this isn't going quite how we'd like it, and we're going to make a change. Patience is the key. The fans don't have it, I think that's for sure, but hopefully the club is resilient enough to show patience even if the fans aren't.
I think from apologies, from the David Moyes perspective, I think in hindsight, that was dead from the get-go, because again, going back to style, that was not representative of Manchester United Football Club. Although I completely agree with what you're saying in terms of he should be given time to implement his ideas and to be given a chance to return this club to where we want to be. I think this next run of games now, he should really put his foot down and say, right, this is where we need to start winning games. This is when things really start for us. We've had our growing pains now. We've grown up a bit. We've had our chicken pox. Now let's go. So I think the next month or so will be crucial for this season, but I hope they're not crucial for Emery's Arsenal career, if that makes sense.
Hopefully so. So let's kind of delve into the details a little bit. We can talk about the City or the Chelsea game, really, but were you pleased with the tactical changes that Emery has made? Which ones, you know, the playing out for the back or the high pressing, or what did you see that Emery changed about this team from last year that was particularly pleasing? And were there any elements that were actually a little bit concerning as well?
I mean, it's a double-edged sword for me, because I like the idea of passing the ball from out the back and the high press. It's just right now, going back to the growing pains again, it's just not quite there yet. The press against Chelsea, I thought for a large part, was limp. They cut through us like a hot knife through butter for the most part, especially in that first half. In the first part
early
of
on.
That first half.
First half an hour, I was worried.
I was very worried. And passing out the back, we were doing it against two teams who, well, for the most part, really constricted our ability to pass the ball out of the back. So
yeah.
We haven't really seen the best of Emery's tactics yet. I think the best thing from Emery's perspective is that he has shown, I'm the man in charge here. You might be on £350,000 a week, but you're coming off.
Mm-hmm.
You're not doing, even though I've got a 19-year-old alongside you, you're not quite doing what I want to either. Off you come. Ramsey, yeah. The same thing. You're in contract negotiations with the club. I don't think your performance against City was satisfactory.
Mm.
You're going to start the game on the bench. I quite like that. I'm looking at Emery right now and I'm thinking, okay, you're not going to take any rubbish from anybody. No. Go for it.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think the substitutions are, for me, brilliant for two reasons. The one that you've just outlined there, that he's showing that you're going to play in my style and you're going to play how I want you to, or you're not going to play.
Yeah.
And also, he's being proactive when it comes to the game itself.
Yes.
So Xhaka had a really poor half against Chelsea. And Emery said, right, I need to change this. Torreira, you're coming on.
Yeah.
And he's willing to accept that he may have got the team wrong.
Yeah.
And say, well, actually, so against City, for example, he brought on Lacazette in the 50 minutes or something, and he'd actually made all three substitutions by the 70th minute.
Mm.
Even, you know, with the threat of having an injury or something like that, he made all three substitutions by the 70th minute. He accepted that he got the... admittedly, one of those was for an injury, but even so.
Yeah.
He accepted that he got the team wrong by bringing in Lacazette early, admitted his mistake, and said, right, we need to do this instead. And Arsenal immediately improved.
Yeah.
That, coming from Arsene Wenger, where he takes so long to make his substitutions, it regularly you'd hit 70 minutes and he's not made one sub.
Yeah.
That is really good to see, as well as the ruthlessness, like you say, where Emery's saying, you're either going to play how I want you to play or you're not going to play at all. I think both are very encouraging signs indeed.
Yeah, certainly. But again, going back to the Chelsea game, I had the chance to actually watch the entirety of the Chelsea game. I didn't have the chance to watch the entirety of the City game. But I thought there were a lot of positives. As you said, it was a very weird game. It was a tale of two halves. But the one criticism I will have, and I'm not sure whether this should be directed at Emery or the players, was I could not understand the second half performance one bit, in terms of the fact that towards the end of the first half, we had them on the ropes, we were dominating the game, we should have been ahead in the game, and then we didn't create anything of note in the second half. And I have no idea, and we'll never know, whether Emery said at halftime, okay, we can hit them on the counter-attack. We have no idea what went down, whether it was just an overall drop in performance from the players, who became complacent, or whether Emery decided to curtail things and just say, I'm actually happy with a point now. But part of me seriously doubts that he would do that, because we'd done so well and we were dominating the game at that point. So I was disappointed in that second half performance. And I was just, in general, disappointed with the defensive complacency and, yet again, the lack of, in my eyes, defensive communication between fullbacks and wingers. Mm. The defence in general, the team in general, the limp press, I wasn't impressed. And again, that's a growing pains thing, but I was just like, you can get it right for this game. You'll be working all week on that tactic for this game. You've got to be able to get it right. And if it's not going right, you've got to do something cohesively. My one complaint about Guendouzi for that game is that I sometimes thought he did too much defensive running that left Xhaka exposed. That was my only complaint of him from that game, is that I think something that he will learn in time is that in terms of positioning, less is more in terms of running to cover ground, because there were times when he was covering Nacho Monreal at left back and Nacho Monreal's a couple of paces behind him. It was just a case of, I can understand why he's going, but he also needs to understand that Granit Xhaka is being left exposed, and we've obviously made it pretty well known that athleticism is not his strong point. So again, it was a weird game. We played some fantastic football, lots of encouraging signs, but just a lot of head scratches in terms of what on earth is going on here, especially from a defensive perspective.
Yeah, I think the key difference between defending and attacking is that when you're trying to score a goal, one person can single-handedly create and score a goal in a moment of brilliance. They can do it on their own. It's the exact opposite for defending, where one person can completely screw your structure. And actually, the most important thing in defending is communicating with one another and being well organized and being compact and having a good shape about you, and making sure that each person does their job, and then collectively that creates a far more cohesive and connected and compact shape. That's how good defensive teams defend well. Look at Atletico Madrid, for example. Diego Godin is a truly outstanding defender.
Oh, yeah.
But actually, if you look through their individual players across the defence and across the midfield, they're not really special. They're good players, they're very good players, but they're not players individually on the same level as some other defenders or some other midfielders in the world. But collectively, you put them all together and they all do their job perfectly within the system. It means that collectively that defence has been one of the best defences for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Because they understand their role within the system, and the system is better than the original parts. The sum is better than the parts. For Arsenal, it feels like it's the other way around.
Yeah.
Where the individual players are actually quite good, but because of the lack of communication, like you say, because of the lack of organisation, because of the lack of cohesiveness, they get picked apart. And the system is worse than what the players kind of suggest that it should be. And I wonder if it's just a case of time, or I wonder if it's a case of the players aren't good enough and we overrate their abilities. Yeah. And I don't know which one it is, and it will probably take the whole season to work out which one it is.
Yeah.
But the defence is a concern, that's for sure.
I mean, if you look at all of the Chelsea goals, Hector Bellerin has been the one that's taken a lot of stick in the early part of the season. And it was interesting for me looking at a few of the main stat websites for player performance, and he's actually rated quite highly by a lot of these websites. But I was looking back at the game yesterday, and I would like to know your perspective on this. The first Chelsea goal, who do you think is responsible or more to blame, let's say? Bellerin or Mkhitaryan?
It
depends. Because I think they're both to blame, I think. Yeah. Because I think they're both guilty of, as I said, Bellerin possibly the limp press, and Willian gets to give the ball off quite easily, even though Arsenal were playing quite high at the pitch and were limp in the press in general. But Mkhitaryan just doesn't do enough in terms of getting goal side, understanding that Marcos Alonso, for all of his critics, is one of the best attacking fullbacks in the Premier League.
Yeah.
I think it's just, again, going back to this thing of non-verbal communication and understanding that that's not quite right. And even though Chelsea targeted that site, I don't think I saw, at least on the broadcast, I certainly did not see Bellerin refer to Mkhitaryan once and say, okay, we need to get closer, something needs to change.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously that's the limit of the broadcast, but I don't know. But then I think when you look at Bellerin for the third goal, I think you could say he's even more to blame, because obviously Lacazette gives the ball away.
Mm-hmm.
And Eden Hazard has the ball. And you should know at that point, if you're Hector Bellerin, that Hazard, who is one of the best players in the world, is going to beat Alexander Lacazette, and you have to get closer to him. Because very rarely is Bellerin beat. Well, actually, come to think of it, he's been beaten more often recently in isolated one-on-one situations. But for the most part, I'm happy for Hazard to beat him one-on-one, just because Hazard is one of the best players in the world, as I said. Yeah. And he's so sharp and he's so quick, so strong on the ball, such fantastic balance. But he has to get closer. And then Torreira also has to track Alonso as well. But it's just a case of Lacazette gives the ball away. And obviously that's where everything begins. But then it's just a case of, okay, how can you rectify? How can you prevent? Torreira doesn't track Alonso and Alonso sneaks in and scores. Bellerin doesn't, I don't think, gets himself in an adequate position to properly defend Hazard. I think I've said Hazard's name about four different times there, and who really cares? But what's fair to say is that Alonso and Eden Hazard have dominated us for seemingly the last three or four times we played Chelsea.
I think on the first goal, I think it depends on who is responsible for the overlap.
Yeah.
So in some teams, they'll go one-on-one.
Yeah.
So the fullback always takes the opposition winger. And yeah. the winger always takes the opposition fullback. No matter where they go, that always happens. Yeah. And in that case, it's obviously Mkhitaryan's to blame. Sometimes, however, they'll say the fullback takes the most advanced opposition player.
Yeah.
And the winger takes the deepest opposition player. And as they overlap, you swap. And you'll see it over and over again.
Over and over again.
Where the fullback will just take one or two steps back just to see the overlap. They see the overlapping run come and they just drop off a little bit just to cover it.
Yeah.
It depends on whose responsibility that is.
Yeah, and we're not privy to that information.
And we're not privy to that information. I've always preferred the one-on-one system. When I've played and when I watch teams play, I think it works a lot better. Mm. It's a lot easier to be responsible and it's a lot easier to know what you're meant to do.
Mm.
If you're a winger, all you have to do is say, well, all I do is track him. That's my job. And then you just do that, and it's simple. And in that scenario, it is Mkhitaryan's fault. And I do have a feeling that Mkhitaryan's probably more to blame based on the kind of the desperation of his run
trying to recover
his position. I think he realised he'd made a mistake. Obviously, we're not privy to that information. That said, the bigger issue for me, not just on the goal itself, was that Willian first and then Hazard later, like you said, and Alonso completely ripped Arsenal to shreds down that left side.
Yeah.
Through the whole 90 minutes, they completely ripped Arsenal to shreds.
I don't think Monreal and Wobi had anything to do. The one time I recall them going down that side, we scored.
Yeah.
Monreal intercepted the ball high up the pitch and we went on to score.
Yeah, precisely. And the biggest issue, and you touched on it, is that not once did I see Bellerin and Mkhitaryan get together and say, we need to do this now, or we need to get Guendouzi to come and tuck over a little bit from midfield, yeah. or we need to have Mustafi move over a little bit from right side of centre half, or we need to do this. We need to make this change because we're struggling to deal with Alonso and Willian, and then Alonso and Hazard. Yeah. Not once did they do that, and that you know we were talking earlier about the fact that the defensive communication and organisation is more important than the individual players. That for me is a perfect illustration of that, where Bellerin and he showed it for the third goal. He doesn't have that defensive acumen to be able to kind of work out what's going wrong and then say, oh well, we need to do this instead.
Yeah,
I like him as a player. I do, I defend him the majority of the time, but his footballing intelligence is severely lacking, and he gets away with it because he's fast. But sometimes it's not enough.
Yeah.
And it was shown on the third goal, and actually it was shown throughout the Chelsea game that they didn't make a change, and that's criminal. That's really criminal.
And I think people forget that he's still young and with that defensive acumen, but then you think of how many games that he's played, and you can make the argument that by this point he should come to that realisation, because Hazard's on the ball for quite a little while before he actually beats Lacazette.
He stands Lacazette up
and then
goes past him.
Lacazette, in fairness to him, gets back and at least holds the Hazard up for a few seconds for Arsenal to get back into a relatively solid shape. But then everything then goes downhill. From the Bellerin perspective, from my perspective, we always played when I was playing. If I was playing on the right-hand side or the left-hand side, up until our defensive third, we would go 1v1, my responsibility is the fullback, and my fullback's responsibility is the winger. And until we get to our defensive third, then we would operate the case of the overlap.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot easier to cover them, because it's, for the most part, well, from my perspective anyway, I'm 5'7 on a good day, and my fullback was 6'1, so it was much better from an aerial perspective for him to be closer towards the centre of the penalty area anyway, so it worked well. It's just, as you said, we can't see everything on the broadcast. But whether Petr Cech got involved in any way, I have no idea. And Petr Cech has enough Premier League experience and has enough experience in general to say, right, what on earth is going on over here? Mm. It needs to be rectified. And Emery the same. I have no doubt that they, if they didn't do it during the game, that they will surely look at it now during the week in terms of, okay, this needs addressing now moving forward. Because it's just criminal. You can't continue to do it. And I look at Bellerin and I think, what does he give you going forward? I actually thought he did quite well getting up and down. I think he still needs to work on his crossing. I thought he had a couple of good pullbacks during the game, which we didn't quite finish. Aubameyang missed a sitter. I'm not sure. I think that was from a Bellerin pullback. But I look at him as a player and people say, oh, he doesn't dribble past players. For the most part, Arsenal will never dribble past players. They will often always just pass players into space and then they can just whip the ball across the area like they did against Chelsea for that second half. Bellerin is never going to beat someone. Neither is Nacho Monreal. And for all intents and purposes, neither is Mkhitaryan or Iwobi or Ozil or Lacazette. No one's going to beat someone like Hazard is. Hazard is a generational talent. It's just, I think people have perceptions in their own mind of how they want a fullback to be. I think they look at Kyle Walker, and I don't think even Kyle Walker really does it. I think he does it more than Bellerin for sure, but just knocking it past and whipping it across. But Arsenal, for that most part, in the way that they have played, not only for the first couple of games this season, but under Wenger and especially during Bellerin's time at Arsenal, is that for the most part he will be played in and then played into space, and then he can whip it first time. That's where his success from a crossing perspective will come from. It's just, I think over the next few weeks I'm going to pay very close attention to him and how he plays, because I fully expect him to retain his spot in the starting 11, because I believe Lichtsteiner is on a 1-year deal anyway. So hopefully Lichtsteiner can say okay, because there was a great video that they did in terms of Lichtsteiner's there going, actually what is best for the team is why I'm here, or something along those lines. Hopefully they can sit down together and say, okay, how would you have done this? What would you have done with your winger? How would you have done this at Juventus? So on and so forth.
Yeah, and I agree. I don't expect Bellerin to be dropped. But I do think that Lichtsteiner's presence does mean that he can't get complacent and just settle for being the starter, as he probably could have done the last couple of years, really. And I do think, I think we saw with Chelsea and City their ability to play through the high press, for me, primarily came from having that deep-lying defensive midfielder.
Jorginho was fantastic.
Which for Chelsea was Jorginho, and he was the best player on the pitch by miles. And if you look, the number of passes he played first time was frightening. You compare it to Xhaka and even Guendouzi to an extent, and also Torreira, they took 1, 2, 3, 4 touches before playing a pass. And they might end up playing the same pass that Jorginho plays, but they play it 2 or 3 seconds later. Yeah. And those 2 or 3 seconds make a huge difference.
Certainly.
And it also comes through the fullbacks. You saw with City, they had Fernandinho lying deeper, but Mendy and Walker were terrific outlets, consistently terrific outlets. And Chelsea the same, they had Alonso and Azpilicueta. I mean, that they could be the four best fullbacks in the league currently.
Yeah.
And you really saw the difference in their ability to play out from the back and get out and beat that initial press came through the speed of the passing of the defensive midfielder and then the ability of the four fullbacks. And I think that Arsenal really lacked that, especially in the fullback positions. And I don't think they really had that in the midfield position either. The ability to beat that initial press through left back and through right back, they lacked. And that's not to say that Monreal and Bellerin are bad players. I think they're perfectly fine. I think they're good players. They're nothing more than that. But perhaps thinking longer term, it may be time to invest in a couple of real top class fullbacks. Liverpool were the same. Have got Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold. Spurs have got four excellent fullbacks on their own. And then you look at City when they signed three fullbacks for £50 million each, and everybody was thinking, well, what are you doing? Fullback doesn't even matter.
Now we know.
Now you can see that Guardiola has understood the importance of having good fullbacks to get up the pitch. And that's what they have in Mendy and Walker. They probably have the best pair in the league. And it is something that Arsenal lack at the moment. And unfortunately, Bellerin is a cause of that issue. That's not to say that he's a bad player, but
no.
Is he of the level that is required to challenge for a title? Maybe not.
No.
Maybe not. We'll see. He's still got time. Like you said, he's still young, but maybe not. We'll see. Let's move on to a few players who have impressed us over the first couple of weeks. I guess the first name to start with is Matteo Guendouzi, isn't it?
What do you Sideshow think about Bob. Him? Can we call him Sideshow Bob?
What do you think about him? Have you marvelled at his performances like everybody else? And how do you see it progressing throughout the year? Do you think he'll hold on to his place and so on?
Yeah, I'd highly recommend people, before I start my personal analysis, go and read Jack Pitbrook's piece on him, because I think it's a really good piece from The Independent on his background and his attitude problems, if you will, at Lorient. But I think he's actually done quite well. It's weird because in my eyes, I just see him as a Wenger signing in a weird way.
Yeah.
Because against Manchester City, I thought at first there were a few nerves, a couple of loose touches. And obviously there was that big one where obviously Manchester City had that chance going through. But in all honesty, I've actually been very impressed with his composure and his skill on the ball. I thought he actually played a fantastic pass to Aubameyang in that Manchester City game, which was arguably the pass of the day. I think he certainly deserves to keep his place. But as I said, for once with experience, I think he'll learn more about positional discipline. But I think he certainly staked his claim to keep his spot within this team alongside... I would like to think that Torreira is going to start in that role from now on, and that Guendouzi is going to take that Xhaka role of someone who can kind of do a bit of everything, a bit of a distributor, someone who's physical enough to protect his back line also. But yeah, I've been thoroughly impressed, and I don't want to put too much pressure on the guy because he's younger than I am. But it's just a case of perhaps... Arsenal fans are looking for a saviour considering our situation, and by no means this early in his Arsenal career is he a saviour, but the signs are certainly promising, and I wish him all the best because he's playing really well and long may it continue.
Yeah, do you think he's now in front of Granit Xhaka in the pecking order?
Judging by the fact that Xhaka came off, I know he had a yellow card, but did he play the entire 90 minutes against City as well?
Yeah, and Xhaka came off again for Torreira.
I'd say he is, as of now. I think he also looks a superior... Right. I think right now he also looks the superior athlete in terms of stamina and possibly able to get around, because the issue that I had with Torreira is that one of his benefits is the fact that he intercepts the ball well. But I think there are a couple of times against Chelsea where he was caught on the ball as well and he was guilty of doing what Xhaka was early in his Arsenal career. But is that if Torreira, there were a couple of occasions where Torreira went in for the interception and he missed.
And did he get there, yeah.
He didn't get there. And he can't do that. He can't dive in and not win the ball. He has to learn that, and I'm sure that he will, because, again, in the World Cup, he was fantastic, did it so well. But the Premier League is a different beast entirely. These players are so good. They are so quick. If you are there a split second late, they will turn past you and they will drive past you.
And in fairness, Xhaka made the same mistakes early on.
Yeah.
But actually, more recently, has learned when to go and when to drop off.
As in, I go to university, or my home university is Swansea University, and last season they signed Roque Mesa, who was fantastic on the ball, very calm, composed, very much a Swansea City player on the ball. But defensively, he was awful, as in... tried to get too tight. I think there's certainly an element of players trying to get too tight and then getting turned far too easily. He was a guaranteed booking a game, much like Granit Xhaka is or was. It was just... And I think, well, Torreira... Did Torreira get booked in the end? I can't remember. I think he did. I don't know. Regardless. But, as I said, he just needs to learn that element of, okay, I can win this. I have won this. Because there are a couple of times where he did and we won possession back. But he can't do it, especially if we are to implement that high press, because he is going to be that last line prior to our vulnerable defence. So, yeah, but Guendouzi, I think, needs to continue to start. If he's playing well, let him keep going. Let him build his confidence, because, again, as I said, the Jack Pitbrook article goes into detail about him and what certain high-ranking officials think of him and his character. So... Mm-hmm. Yeah, go and read that, because it's a really fascinating piece and helps explain my argument further.
Yeah, I agree completely. Definitely go and read the piece. It is very eye-opening. There are two things I'd like to see him do. One is the defensive positioning, like you talk about. The second one is I just want to see him move the ball that bit quicker.
Mm-hmm.
I think his passing is outstanding. He's got a great passing range. He can really rake those long passes out to opposite fullbacks and stuff. He's very accurate. And he looks to go forward as well. He doesn't just pass it safe. He does look to move it forward.
Yeah. But, and that's, you know, sorry to cut you off, but that's actually a really good point in terms of perhaps Arsenal, especially in the latter Wenger years, were just so concerned with keeping the ball rather than playing. Because sometimes... Yeah, sometimes you need to play a risky pass in order to draw someone out of their press or to take them 5 yards further than they should be, and then you can play. I get the impression with him, perhaps it's because he's young and inexperienced, that he's willing to do that. And
he's willing to
be perfectly honest, with my playmakers, players such as Ozil and Mkhitaryan, I don't mind them getting some things wrong in the final third. No. I really, truly don't. If they've got 75% possession, I really couldn't care less. All I'm looking for at the end of the day is them for to have played a few key passes within the game that changed the game, from my perspective. And whilst he's in a position where you need more stability, Guendouzi now, I don't mind if he does that, especially in more advanced areas of the pitch. Yeah. I have no issues with him doing that.
No, I agree completely. I do think he does do it a little slowly. That's the only issue I have. I think in the modern game, it's so important to move that ball at pace, to move it at tempo. Wenger always said, he said it for years, you can tell when Arsenal are playing well because they move the ball quickly. In the midfield, through the defence, players don't take more than two touches on the ball. They get it shifting from each area of the pitch.
Yeah.
And Guendouzi does slow it down a little bit every now and then.
Yeah.
Which is a little frustrating, especially when you contrast him to Jorginho, like we said, who was fantastic.
He was milk and chocolate. He was,
and he moved the ball so fast. As soon as he got it, it was gone, bang. And I think Guendouzi, while he does have the same passing qualities,
yeah,
I think he needs to learn to provide a little bit more tempo with his distribution as well.
And
then also, like you said, the defensive positioning as well.
The one thing I will say is that I actually thought he was very good in holding on to the ball, especially in the first part of that first 45 against Chelsea, because we were really under the cosh for some parts. And it seemed to me that he was very happy taking the ball, very commanding in terms of, no, this is mine, I want it. And he seems very happy to take the ball. He doesn't shy away. And I actually thought, whilst I agree with you for the most part, because we're going to be dominating possession in most games, in that part of the game, I thought he played the game very well in terms of, right, let's keep the ball for a moment, because it seemed Mkhitaryan couldn't find an Arsenal player for love or money. And we just couldn't hold the ball, and we couldn't play it out of the defence for about a 10-15 minute stretch, it seemed. And it just seemed that every time it went to either him or Xhaka, in fairness, that we were just able to kind of slow things down and regain some credit within the game, if you will. So if he can continue this way for the entirety of the season, great. But the one thing I will say is that if he's going in a competition with Xhaka over the last two seasons has started seasons poorly but finishes seasons well. So if we have competition for those two as our eight in midfield, okay, I'll be down for that. But whoever's got the hot hand plays, and at the moment Guendouzi's got the hot hand playing.
Or the hot feet.
Another
player who impressed both of us, he only played in one of them, was Alex Iwobi. He played on the left flank. I thought he looked pretty good, actually, don't you?
Yeah, I thought similarly in terms of being composed on the ball, held the ball up really well, really industrious, and people were surprised with the lineup for the game. I wasn't surprised to see him start, considering the lineup we played at Stamford Bridge last season with him and Welbeck and Lacazette. He's perfect for a game like this because he obviously had the Arsenal quality in being able to hold the ball up and find teammates and play intricate passes, get into nice attacking areas. He should have had another goal. He missed a gilt-edged opportunity.
Yeah.
But this is a big season for him. And it's again a case of, if Mkhitaryan and Ozil aren't pulling their weight, play him. Aubameyang will happily play on the right-hand side. You might have an imbalance in terms of, because again, you'll drift inside, but play the guys who are giving you what you want and play the guys who are impressing, because as you said, if you're of the mindset that results don't necessarily matter as much this season, Go to him and say, okay, we've given you a new contract. Go and show us what you're worth, because this is a big season for him. This is very much, or prior to this season, you would have argued that this was a make or break season for him in his Arsenal career.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think he's now at that age, 22, 23, where you need to be playing week in, week out to really kind of fulfil your value, really, especially with a new contract, like you said. I thought he played very well. I thought his feet were quick. And you talked about how Arsenal lack players who can dribble past opponents. So Mkhitaryan can do it a little bit, but he's
it's not,
not
in
great
the final
at it.
Third. What I mean by dribble, I don't know, not like Eden Hazard as in beat
no,
type of players.
No, exactly.
What they're good at is being able to evade pressure, in my eyes, being able to shield the ball. Mkhitaryan can do it to an extent, and Iwobi can as well, but I don't think that Eden Hazard's is... I should have further clarified that point. I don't see them beating someone in the final third and then scoring a wonderful goal like Hazard is capable of doing.
See, I feel that Iwobi does have that ability. I agree with you with Mkhitaryan. Mesut Ozil obviously doesn't. Aubameyang probably doesn't really have the touch for it, and I don't think Lacazette has quite the speed, maybe. But I feel like of those attacking players that Arsenal do have, Iwobi is probably the best dribbler in terms of in a one-on-one situation up against a fullback. You need him to beat him. Can he get past him? I wouldn't say he's as good as, say, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain at it.
Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain was fantastic when given space to do so, and I think playing him at wing-back, you really saw that towards the end of his Arsenal career.
Yeah, but I think Iwobi does have similar abilities where he can pick up the ball. He's got great pace. His touch is excellent. He's an intelligent footballer. He's able to find space and exploit it. And actually, I think he's improving in his directness as well. He's willing to run at players now. Whereas before, he'd pick up the ball and he'd almost look a little bit timid, a bit scared. Whereas now he's playing with a little bit more purpose, which is nice to see.
Do you think he'll play some minutes in central midfield this season? Because I think, it seems a lot of Arsenal youngsters will play in central areas, but I think he certainly has the qualities. He reminds me, and I might get slated for this, but I look at him sometimes and I think, you remind me a little bit with those quick feet of Santi Cazorla in terms of being able to hold the ball up and just seeing being able to kind of hold the ball up in dangerous situations and then come out all right. And I'm thinking, okay, that's nice. And then there were other times last season where I thought he was just guilty of slowing everything down too much. So hopefully this season again, whilst he's got the hot hand, while he's confident, keep playing him. I was disappointed that he came off against Chelsea.
And not Mkhitaryan,
because
besides
the goal contributions, I thought that Mkhitaryan was poor. I just think you've got to play a hot hand now. And I think whilst I have agreed with the majority of Emery's substitutions, that was one I didn't agree with as much.
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, let's move on to Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang. We've both listed them as players who have disappointed, I think, so far. I mean, let's be honest. I thought they've both been absolutely terrible. Aubameyang, I'm not really concerned about. He tweeted out after the game that today he missed, tomorrow he makes sure he score. I'm more concerned about his City performance than his Chelsea performance.
Yeah.
Because against City, he was completely isolated and he hardly got a touch of the game. against Chelsea, at least he was getting chances and at least he was getting involved in the game. Mkhitaryan, on the other hand, I am a little bit more concerned about his performance. I'm just not quite sure how good he is.
Neither am I.
I think he has moments that are really high quality, like we saw for the assist, the goal. He created five chances against Chelsea, which is more than anybody.
Really?
And he does have, and he had a couple of cutbacks and things like that. So he does have these moments where he has real quality, but he's extremely inconsistent. And from within games, from touch to touch, he's inconsistent. He's not athletic, really. He's not that fast.
No.
He's much better from a central position, but he's never going to play in a central position because you've got Ozil and Ramsey. Is he... is he good enough to that you have to play him, or is he different enough so that when you play him, he provides a complement for Ozil and Ramsey? And the answer, I believe, to both of those questions could well be no.
Yeah, I agree.
He's not good enough that you absolutely have to play him, and he's not different enough where you have so many of the same players in the same team that it kind of doesn't really work. Do you agree, or do you see it a little bit differently?
The one thing that I do want to see going forward from now on is Aubameyang and Lacazette play together, because the Manchester City game in particular, we looked a lot more dangerous, as you said, when they came up to the pitch. The one issue with that is then Ozil is down on the right, and then rather than Mkhitaryan tracking Marcus Alonso, it's Mesut Ozil. And that's just, in my eyes, a recipe for disaster. If things were to remain the same, but obviously you could supplement that with changed defence layers in Mustafi moves over, Guendouzi moves over, everyone moves over to that side to offer better and more protection, and then give Ozil more of a free role coming in off that right-hand side. But I would tend to agree, as in you look at... I mean, I was in the preview that we did prior to this season, Mkhitaryan wasn't in my starting 11 because...
No.
Mine neither. I was all for balance, right? Whereas now you could say that Guendouzi replaces Xhaka in my team or whatever, but the imprint of style in my head remains the same in terms of you have both wingers coming in from the inside, and I just don't see it with Mkhitaryan. He's just, as you said, he's in and out. It just seems he has had a few games where he's been very good, but then there are just games, Tottenham away last year. Awful, and it's just a case of sometimes you just think, okay, he's approaching 30 at this point. We've got Iwobi, who's got a bit of a hot hand at the moment. All right, take a place on the bench. I just think I would tend to agree right now, and I just think if Emery has any doubts about anybody, now is the time in my eyes to say, people might argue, oh, you've got to keep the team the same, you've got to have that cohesion, you've got to have them all on the same level of understanding. My argument is at this point, Arsenal are good enough to beat the majority of teams in the Premier League, regardless of stability of the starting 11. You might as well just say, actually, Reece Nelson's going to play. Iwobi's going to play. Guendouzi's going to play. Might as well do it, because you then put it into them, nothing is guaranteed. And I think, which is why I know this is completely off topic, I couldn't understand for the life of me the Callum Chambers move, because I'm still unconvinced by Sokratis and Mustafi. The second goal, I found very weird their positioning, or I found their positioning very strange, just directly on halfway, as in just drop back 2 or 3 yards and you completely negate that chance and that goal. Mm-hmm. It's just a case of, okay, now is the time if you really want to be ruthless and say, actually, we are going to play the kids because they're deserving of this opportunity, because the experienced players within this squad haven't shown themselves capable of playing up to the standards that we demand. Now's the time to do it.
I think on Mkhitaryan, there's one point that I want to give in favour of him and one point that I'll give against him. When he plays, Arsenal just look very slow.
Yeah.
When it's him and Ozil and Aubameyang up front, it's a very slow team. And you look at City and you look at Liverpool in particular, and you look at the speed that they have, especially in wide areas. So Salah and Mane, Mahrez with Sané or Sterling or Gabriel Jesus. They're quick, really quick athletic teams.
Yeah.
And Arsenal very much aren't.
Yeah.
Especially when Ozil and Mkhitaryan play. And when Lacazette plays, you move Aubameyang wider. You bring a little bit more pace into the team. One good thing that Mkhitaryan does do, which I do believe is important, is he does tend to press the ball well.
Mm.
And he does come from Dortmund, where he's played in a high-pressing system for the majority of his career. So in trying to adapt to Unai Emery's new style, which is going to be a high-pressing style, having somebody like Mkhitaryan, who is experienced in pressing the ball, will help, and he does do it well. And like you say, when you say, well, if you play Lacazette, you have to play Ozil on the right, Ozil is not good at pressing the ball. He's not good at tracking the fullback. He's not diligent. He's not industrious. And Mkhitaryan is, for the most part, all of those things.
Yeah.
So I do think, while I am a bit critical of him, I do think that there are a few reasons why he should continue to play, perhaps for now, or why there is reason to be a little bit positive moving forward. But then on top of it all, like you said, you get to the age, and the age is a real issue for me. He's 29, he's nearly 30 years old. He's not got that long left. At that age, you need players to be performing well in the here and now.
Yes.
As a 29-year-old, you need to be performing well in the here and now, and he isn't.
Yeah.
He's not performing that much better than, say, Alex Iwobi, who is 5-6 years his junior.
Even more possibly.
Even more possibly. Could Reece Nelson be thrust into that role, perhaps, just to see if he can sink or swim?
Yep.
Aaron Ramsey is even 2 or 3 years his junior as well. There are other players out there that Arsenal could be turning to instead of Mkhitaryan who have a higher ceiling and higher potential just because of the age.
I would just say, if you were to ask me who would I drop, Mkhitaryan or Ozil, I would say Mkhitaryan, simply because in my mind Ozil is still the superior player and gives the team more in terms of his creativity. And I still think that you can do more with him coming off that right hand side, Bellerin being the outlet. And my feeling is with Emery is that he would adapt the team defensively to fit Mesut Ozil in on that right hand side. Because we saw last year that Aubameyang was willing to track back from the left-hand side. So you can certainly supplement the team to do that with Guendouzi or Torreira, just leaning more towards that right-hand side, or just a little bit more of a shift that side from the back four. But, yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. Do you want... We were a little peek behind the curtain here. We were going to talk about Even Gazidis and Stan Kroenke and Aaron Ramsey. I am aware of time.
How long have we been talking?
We have been rambling on for just short of an hour.
No way.
Just about 57 minutes.
Apologies.
So that discussion about Gazidis and Kroenke and Ramsey, we don't have to have it now. We can easily shelve it for another episode because it isn't that newsworthy. Or do you want to have a break and tag it on to the end and make this a long one?
We could do another podcast this week if you're available. That could work. This is another peek behind the curtain, isn't it? Us organising another one. This rarely happens. This has never happened.
Okay, yeah. Well, let's do that. We will. We'll come back either later this week or early next week. We'll get our schedules together and see what happens. And we'll make sure to discuss Gazidis and his potential AC Milan move, Kroenke and his takeover, and Aaron Ramsey and his delaying of contract talks by the sounds of it. Is there anything else on Emery, on City and Chelsea that you want to discuss now before we close?
No, I think we've discussed it all, seeing as we've been gone, well, we've been talking for an hour. I actually think that was a really good conversation about it, actually, all things considered, because you hear so much negativity, as I said at the top of the show, in terms of the radio, social media. And I think this conversation, by no means am I trying to blow smoke up my own backside, but I thought it was a really realistic approach to how we should be viewing things as a fan.
Yeah, I agree. Like Henry said, go and check out Jack Pitbrook's article on Guendouzi on The Independent. And also, if you can, go and check out Neville and Carragher's debate about Unai Emery from Monday Night Football. On Sky Sports. He's on Twitter and stuff, so he should be able to find it. It is a very interesting debate, and I do think Neville especially makes some very important points that Arsenal fans should be extremely wary of this season. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. This has been episode 2 of season 2 of the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. We will be with you hopefully later this week or early next week, where Unai Emery is looking for his first Arsenal win. Let's not panic just yet. See you later.